California Chinese American Oral Historical Project.
Yeah.
Jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Study Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. May 24th, 1980, interview with Marshall Ho at his residence in Sunland, conducted by Beverly Chen. Okay, Mr. Ho, could you tell us about your parents' background, where they came from, and what they did for their profession?
My parents were born in San Francisco area. I don't know, my mother thinks I was born in San Leandro or something like that, in Northern California. And belong to the epoch of the San Francisco earthquake and the subsequent era. Are you familiar with that era? Let me refresh you on this salient point. Yeah. The California became a state in 1850. The Chinese came a little subsequently as laborers, as farm workers, and they came. Maybe some of them came for gold because the response to the California discovery of gold was worldwide. But basically, I think the Chinese came because the conditions in Canton are so bad in the 50s, 60s, and 70s that there was practically starvation. There was agrarian revolt, and so therefore they fanned out all through the world: Mexico, Singapore, East Indies, and United States, and so on and so forth. So a certain amount came to the United States.
So, you said your father was born here. So
yeah, my
that means your
born
grandfather
here.
Came
my
here
grandfather came, yeah.
During the era that you described.
Yeah, my grandfather came in the latter, latter part of the gold rush. I think the main part of the gold was around 1850, thereabouts, a little afterwards. And I think the aftermath, 1860, 1870, were the last part of the gold rush in California. And my grandfather came here in the 1870s,
mm-hmm.
which makes it about 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Do you know why he came here?
He came here because for the same reason every Cantonese came here, from China. China in the South at that time was in the throes of great political changes, great poverty, and great unsettledness, and there's rumors of great opportunities elsewhere, and the merchant marine of the United States was playing a very active trade between the southern China ports and the American ports. It was the beginning of the California state, and people tend to think about Gunsan as being the hill of mountains of gold here.
So that's your father was, a grandfather was attracted to the mountains.
Undoubtedly, there's no opportunities left in the South China,
Mm-hmm. Okay, how about your father? He was born in the Bay Area, and did he ever come down to Los Angeles?
No. My father never even knew about Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
First of all, you have to realize that in the 1990s, 1910, the era of my father,
mm-hmm.
The Chinese had very limited opportunities and were not extremely conversant about the American geography or history.
Mm-hmm.
They all center around San Francisco area, San Francisco Bay, and other went to the farms, other went on labor projects on the Union and Pacific and Southern, and maybe Santa Fe railroads tracks, So what do they know? They don't know much about other places, you understand?
What did your father do?
My father was at, he didn't live very long to begin with, but when he, in his short adult life, my father was a laborer, and also, he was also had one of the unusual job of a collector for a telephone company in Chinatown. He was
in San Francisco?
Yeah, in Oakland.
Oakland,
yeah.
Oh.
That's across the bay from San Francisco. A pretty big Chinese colony was there because after the San Francisco fire, they went across the bay from San Francisco to Oakland.
Uh-huh. How did he get to become a collector for a telephone company?
He?
And what exactly does the job entail?
Well, it entails probably some knowledge of English. So go ahead and report to superiors.
Uh-huh.
Some knowledge of Chinese also can talk to the collectees.
Collected only from Chinese.
I don't know, but it could work around Chinatown area.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's too many telephones, because the telephones were not that many at that time. The Chinese who were, can afford them may not have been too many. You know?
I see. So you were born and raised in the Bay Area?
I was born, yeah, that's correct.
Okay, which year, please?
Oh, I would say that I was born in 1910.
Mm-hmm.
My father died in 1911.
All right, please continue.
All right. So,
when did you come to Los Angeles?
Well, I came to Los Angeles in the I first came here in 1930.
Mm-hmm. And what prompted you to come here?
Well, the opportunities up in the Bay Area seem to be less than here, and Los Angeles was beginning to become an attractive place. That is to say, Los Angeles is much more modern than San Francisco and, you know, the Bay Area in many ways. So that most of the young people look toward Los Angeles as being a more exciting place. I don't know. When people go somewhere, there's a combination of factors, very little,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Could you tell us about your schooling and the places you have lived in altogether from the time you were born until 1945?
Oh, my schooling was quite not diverse. I went to the regular elementary school and high school, and then I went to a lot of
in
courses.
Chinatown, right? In Oakland, Chinatown?
Yeah.
I see.
I went to other courses in different colleges, you know, not with the idea of being undergraduate, but I take courses.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to...
Did you ever get a degree?
No, I got a degree in an engineering school, but it's not 4 years, I think it was about 1.5, 2 years or something. Affiliated with the Curtis Wright Institute, where I became an aviation mechanic, you know, at some time, you know, those days I had a certificate of a completion.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing in engineering college, and I studied at least odds and
ends. Which college did you go to, or which colleges?
Oh, I went to Oakland Polytechnic, and I took courses at UC. Berkeley, you know, but courses.
Mm-hmm, yes.
You know.
How did you support yourself? You mentioned that your father died in 1911. Did your mother start working?
No, my mother died a few years afterwards, I think. A number of years afterwards, but...
Did you have older brothers
I have no. I have only one younger sister.
So what happened after your parents passed away? Who brought you up?
Well, relations, you know, relatives.
Your father had relatives.
Yeah, you know, my
uncles?
Mother, relatives, aunts,
your
and uncles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I see.
And also, you know, in the old days, the clans are very important.
Mm-hmm.
The same guy. You speak Cantonese?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
and your last. Oh, by the way, I need to know your Chinese name, the complete name. Hao.
Hao Da.
Hao Da. Being a Da. Do you remember the your home county or home village back in China?
Yeah, well, the Huiping.
Huiping. Mm-hmm. Okay, your home village. Have you ever been back in China?
Yep.
Recently?
Yeah.
I see. Did you communicate with the people in China while you were living here prior to returning to China?
Well, a long, long time ago, I had a few cousins who used to write me for some money.
Oh.
有一点的嘛, they used to have some land then, I have some cousins, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think my father married several, my grandfather married several times, actually there was some relationships, you know, cousins or half-brothers or something,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know, when you come to America and you grew up in America, you live in this environment, somebody from another civilization write to you in their own language.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult. You have to translate and everything else. A lot of the accuracies are gone. Particularly my parents died when I was so young, and, you know, they died so early
mm-hmm.
in life. And I don't, my grandparents are long gone dead, and I don't have any uncles and aunts on my, you know, on the side that are in line, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very difficult to know, excepting rumors and old friends of the family, you know, outside that, it's very difficult.
Was that a usual or commonplace thing to have cousins, distant relatives to write to their relatives back here for money?
Yeah.
At that time?
Yeah.
Because apparently you've never met them at the time they wrote to you.
Well, yeah, they write only on the basis of this is our property or our, you know, our farm, and you are part of the owner or lineage, you know.
Even though you were born here and your father was born here.
Yeah. Well, it's a nature, in a nature, human beings, that if you have, if they have liabilities and need help, they claim you as a relative. When they have goods to share, they want as little as possible, they don't share. This is the human nature. And the Chinese are no different from other people.
So did you send them money?
Or a few times when they, the letter seems very desperate, I send a little bit of money. A little bit, I won't say a little bit, maybe only a couple $100, something like that.
I'm sure all that were, all those requests came before 1945.
Yeah, before the World War.
You never went back, say, prior to 1945?
No.
Mm-hmm. I see. Do you associate mostly with Chinese or non-Chinese?
By the way, when I say I hadn't gone back there, I can't remember that far back. People tell me that when I was young, that my uncle went there to buy goods and stuff like that for a restaurant. That I've been there, but I don't think I have. It's a lot of my earlier life is obscure, see,
mm-hmm.
even to me. I think it's because I want to forget about one thing else. Most people like my friends, they remember things when they're 3 years old.
Mm.
I don't remember anything less than 6 years old. So there must be a conscious effort to forget what.
Mm-hmm.
So
you
yeah.
must have had a tough time growing up then?
Oh yeah, supposing your father and mother were dead by the time when you were only 1 or 2 years old.
Mm.
Well, you know. You would know that sort of.
So, but when you grew up among a Chinese, among the Chinese.
I grew up. Yeah, I would say I grew up a good part of my life among the Chinese, you know. I live in Oakland, which is on the fringe of Oakland, on the edge of Oakland, well, within Oakland Chinatown, which
mm-hmm.
there are quite a number of Chinese around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're mixed, you know, stuff like here, mixed, but mostly Chinese, let us say.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear the Chinese language talk, you know, and
mm-hmm.
I ate Chinese food.
Yeah.
And absorb a certain Chinese culture.
After you came to Los Angeles, did you continue to go to school or did you work?
I've been going to school most of my life. That is to say, even now I attend classes here and there. You know, I mean, you know, I make it almost a habit to take some courses here and there,
mm-hmm.
and I like adult education or like UCLA extension courses. I can even keep record of it. I just, certain things I like, I just want to attend them, you know. In that sense, I have a continuation of education, but so far as formal education and getting a degree, I have always
mm-hmm.
disliked that.
Right. So did you continue to work as an engineer after?
No, I did not. As a mechanic. Well, I worked as an engineer for Hughes Aircraft Company during the World War, during the Second
mm-hmm.
World War, you know, in the engineering department doing, you know, what they call para engineering, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But what happened after 1930 and before?
Oh,
1930,
I keep working here and there, you know, working all through the Southern California, you know, most of the time.
I thought you came to Los Angeles and you stayed in
Los
Angeles.
Yeah, I stayed in Los Angeles most of the time.
Most of the time.
Uh-huh. Working a little bit here, working a little bit there, you know. But in the main, I work also for markets and stuff like that. You know.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember. Los Angeles changed so much. You know, you work for a place, you come back 3 years afterwards, the whole neighborhood's torn down. And new, you know, that kind of, like in Santa Monica. I worked in Santa Monica for a long time, you know,
mm-hmm.
In the Chinese market and the grocery and the American food company, that kind of stuff, you know. And then when you go back there, there's no more there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I work all over. I managed to keep alive, that's what it is.
Do you find that you began to associate more with non-Chinese after you left?
Left San Francisco?
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Because geography plays a big role, you know.
A big what?
Geography plays an important thing in a person's cultural growth because Chinatown, there are no opportunities. So when you go outside and work among Americans, you know, naturally you begin to find habitation among outside of Chinatown. We tend to stay in Chinatown because we may have relatives there and we like Chinese food and, you know, we feel more comfortable in a discriminating society. You know, you feel more comfortable, you know, misery loves company, you know. This is very difficult for people who do not know that era, you know.
When you came to Los Angeles, did you try to find a place to live in Chinatown, or did you find somewhere else to live?
Oh, I lived outside of Chinatown.
Okay.
Because
so you
Chinatown
had no conscious desire to be with the Chinese?
No, there's no opportunity in Chinatown. You have to.
Mm-hmm.
Los Angeles was the most advanced place in the United States in those periods because there was a period of the Great Depression.
Mm.
See, unless you have been in a depression, this is like going on Mars and Venus. You know, there's absolutely no idea whatsoever what it is. I could give you an example. Just like there's a Great Depression now, you don't see anybody working. All you see people sitting on the porch.
Mm-hmm.
And the only policemen are working fine and working a few civil service people are working. Most of the people are not working. They have about 50 million unemployed in a population of 90 million people, which is equivalent to, right now they have 30, 40 million unemployed now.
Mm-hmm.
Now they get scared, there's 7 million unemployed, see?
Did you feel that the depression hit the Chinese community just as bad as
of
the
course.
White community?
Worse. No, whereas the Chinese were the last to be, as the minorities, they're always last to be employed. You know, they're first to be fired. They have to be hired.
Right.
And the only reason why they sometimes find work is because they work so cheaply, you know, that people might take a few of them on simply because
they
bosses
didn't have to pay much.
Yeah, bosses always pay lower if they can help it.
Uh-huh. Do you feel that, what did you observe that the Chinese did then? Did they just sit on their porches or? What kind of method
well,
do they
Chinese,
use to get
well,
out
Chinese,
of depression?
Chinese families are always united together very closely, you know? And so therefore, in some ways, the depression doesn't hit them so hard. They are already at the bottom scale of the social ladder. They're always already in the slums.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, I'm talking about the majority of them, that during that time, 1930, there are many Chinese who are affluent, who own stores and businesses, you know, that kind of thing. But the majority of the Chinese are already living in the place, so they can't go any further, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they take a middle-class American, let's say he lives in a big house in Beverly Hills, and all of a sudden he loses everything and has to live in Watts or something like that. Well, it represents a big drop, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But where does the Chinese go? You know, but then the government has food programs, and so also the Chinese...
Do the Chinese also accept food programs and...
Those who need it will accept anything, Chinese or blacks or whites or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
No, choice is a term of the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
Necessity is a word of the lower classes.
But some people feel that the Chinese would rather go around asking for their relatives' help rather than...
They ask for relatives' help because most of them don't know literate enough to go around to get government red tape and so on and so forth. There are some that will not, you know, out of pride. There's no question about it. But I would say if they can get great big baskets of food free and great big chunks of meat free, they'll take it, Chinese or not. When you need it, you take it. But there's a tendency to be romanticized about this because many Chinese historians or what the local historians tend to make this point. On the large, let's say on a percentage basis, Chinese would tend to be less in this area because they are used to working with the relatives more. Now, that is the truth. But there shouldn't be any stereotype for Chinese disdaining handouts.
You never took any form of welfare during the Depression?
No. As a matter of fact, during the Depression, I took some. I was part of the time I was in the unemployed struggle, that is say. Mm-hmm. There was organizations of the unemployed and I joined them.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined with the American workers or people who are in poverty in organizations that demand food and, you know,
mm-hmm.
relief. In those days they did not have welfare. They have relief.
Oh, relief.
Yeah, they hand out.
What did they hand out?
Government food.
Just
baskets,
food, right?
Cotton, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Sugar, potatoes and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
But they also it was no scarcity in those days. The Depression came as a result of surpluses, you understand? Now there's dangerous time because there may be not enough stuff, so that not enough gasoline and things are high in a
mm-hmm.
dangerous time. In those days, the Depression came because
yeah.
there were lots of goods. They had to plow the potatoes back into the ground because
mm-hmm.
if they put on a market, well, you can't even get 3 cents a pound
mm-hmm.
for potatoes.
Yes.
Do you know that potatoes went down to 2 cents a pound?
Mm-hmm. Yes, there were many reasons for it. What we're looking at is the end result, which was that there was a depression, and as far as the Chinese concerned, you felt that they were greatly or even more affected by the depression than the rest of the
Americans. Well, you see, there's two ways of looking at it. To say that they suffer a great deal more than the depression may not anymore, because they say Chinese tend to take care of their own relatives to some
mm-hmm.
extent. But to say as a group, their income dropped, you know, or that they're, you know, these using statistics to see whether a group has suffered in the traditional sense of deprivation or lack of income or lack of opportunity, of course the Chinese suffer more. For a group that has at least to be, last to be higher, first to be fired, naturally the income cut is greater than the whites.
Mm-hmm.
See, we Chinese have been living under illusions and romanticism, you know. And romanticism peculiarly is a middle class luxury item. When a Chinese gets to the point where he's very hungry, you know, like I have been, you know, I would fight for my food. I would join the unemployed.
Yeah. And which is what you did during
part of the time, some of the time.
Mm-hmm.
At the time when I'm working, I don't need to.
Yeah. Do you remember how much you were being paid at that time?
Well, when I was working in the, let's say before that I was working in canneries
uh-huh.
when I was in my teens
okay.
in Northern California. I worked for some time for 25 cents an hour.
Mm-hmm. That was in the 1920s, right?
1925, 26,
mm-hmm.
27, you know.
Okay.
But during the Depression, well, the wages are higher than that. I would say maybe about 35, 40 cents an hour, sometimes 50 cents an hour, sometimes 75, a dollar an hour. So it all depends what you're doing. And by that time,
you mean the wages did not go down during the Depression?
Well, how can you go down below 50 cents or 35 cents an hour?
Well, okay, let's put it this way. Just prior to October 1929,
yeah.
If a job paid you a dollar an hour, wouldn't it go down lower during the Depression since there were were more labor available?
Well, in some industries, yes, but not there are wage cuts, like in factory, there's wage cuts, you know. In other places, the wage is low enough because, well, I would say in the main, there are tendencies toward wage cuts, but they're not very deep. Because in history, it's not all of a sudden October 29. October 29 comes, and the stock market crashes, and the depression comes in. But a lot of people are still in doing, a lot of people are better off. Take for instance, if I have never invested in the stock market, and I just put my money where it's safe, let's say, and depression comes, I could buy twice as much for my money.
But those provided have, your bank didn't
but yeah, that's provided, yeah, so on and so forth, yeah.
But when after you came to Los Angeles, it seems like you took a rather different course. Working, for instance, most people tend to work at one job and they tend to stick very closely to the Chinese. Would you say that most of the people you associated with were, say, Caucasians?
Half and half. I work for some Chinese, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I work for some food markets, food and vegetable markets. I work for some...
For the one on San Pedro Street?
No,
the
I work for retailers like that,
like
markets.
Okay.
I work for American markets. I work for meat shops, Chinese wholesalers. And sometimes I do a little housework, sometimes I do a little garden work. And sometimes I do just labor, you know, like truck loading and stuff like that.
You said you were trained to be a para engineer, at least.
Oh, yeah, but I did not find any work in those days. I took Chunzi, I work 29, 30, in between working. See, I work also in the valley, that is, say, Fresno and other places, pick grapes, you know, field workers, you know, and canneries. But in between, when those seasons are not on, I go to school. I go to school, I go to a Curtis Wright engineering school, aircraft school to become mechanic and something. But I never was able to sustain anything because to be able to go to the school that supports yourself, put up a place to live, all those things require a certain amount of affluence, you know. Many Chinese are able to do that because the fathers work for a little grocery store or laundry or something and put the kids through college, you understand? Well, not having any parents, you know?
And your uncles or aunts did not support you beyond the...
Yeah, I left the family pretty early.
Early did you leave?
Oh, I would say that I came back and left. I would say that I began to start working on my own at 15, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right after I came out of high school, I was 15, I worked all summer and whenever I have a chance, work after school. But I graduated around high school around 1927, I think, and from that point on, I worked all kinds of work.
Mm-hmm.
Janitorial work, and labor, and field work.
Is that sort of trend continuous through after World War II and into the 50s?
Continues in so far you have to live. You know what I'm saying?
Let's
say they say the person that had nobody else's support, and he has to keep on working in order to eat.
Well, what I meant was after World War II, the economy turned around, and if you wanted to, I presume you could have gotten continued to work as an engineer.
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, during the war, there's a lot of employment, you know?
Yeah, during the war, it was.
Yeah, but you have to go
to
work somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
No, but before that, I was already married, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And.
Did you marry a Chinese American also?
No, I married a Korean American.
Korean American. Oh. How did your relatives and friends look upon that? Did you get any negative?
People. Talk a little bit about it, you know. In those days, even marrying outside of your, supposing you're, say, yup, you marry some, yup, it's already something, you know. Or you marry, you know, you're you're from San Francisco and you marry somebody from New York, it's gospel, you know?
Did you marry before coming to Los Angeles?
No, I was married in 39, 40, yeah. I was married when I was 30 years old.
At that time, was interracial marriage popular or?
No, just beginning to happen.
Yeah, just beginning to happen, I see. So,
yeah.
You were one of the first.
Well, see, since you're a sociologist, you can see the trend of the person's life.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't play close to home, he doesn't live with his daddy or mommy. He has a tendency to be on his own early. He works among Americans, he takes jobs which Chinese do not normally take. You know, like working among American loading trucks and things like that. And he's not in China as a waiter, he's not in Chinatown as a, and he doesn't particularly depend on any relatives. He begin to develop a very singular sense of independence, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So intermarriage, all these things will be just as a matter of course for him because
mm-hmm.
he gets to be very uniquely individual, you know.
How would you identify yourself, or how did you identify yourself at that time in your early adulthood? Did you feel that you were an American or Chinese or none of the above?
Well, I have to give a little background so they get a little bit to explain that. I have always had a curious mind.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, I always...
You already had a
curiosity from childhood. Since being an orphan, you know, that is to say, somebody else supports you, you know,
mm-hmm.
and your father, you learn to keep quiet and observe.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way you can survive other people's wrath
mm-hmm.
or, you know, distaste or whatever, you know,
mm-hmm.
and peculiarities or petulance. So you learn to be very quiet and learn to think. And then you learn to observe. And you learn to observe, you learn to read. You learn to read, you learn to think, you know, for yourself. So naturally, from the very beginning, there's a tendency toward thinking and for books, for curiosity. And so what happened is that in time I tackled these questions long before they break upon me as becoming the problems.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I being in Chinatown? Who am I being this? Who am I being that? And I was in China long enough, went to a little bit of school, you know? So I did learn some Chinese from talking to the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
I did learn how to read a Chinese newspaper.
Did you ever go to a Chinese school?
In those days, everybody goes to a little bit of Chinese school. But they're not real Chinese school. They, after American school, you go for a couple hours, you know?
Mm-hmm.
One or two hours.
And you did that?
I did short time.
For a few months or years?
A couple of years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But they, no, the requirements are not strict, you know? You go when you can, and you go when you have money to pay for it.
Your aunt or uncle paid for it.
In some cases, you know, the community lets some people come in, that kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Did you find that the Chinese you learned was useful, or was it not useful in later years?
I think it's useful. Any kind of education you acquire becomes useful. I find that, for instance, my identity with the Chinese, it was fairly solid because of my early years growing up in a Chinese community.
So you did think of yourself as a Chinese?
Well, yeah, I think of myself as a Chinese American, you know,
uh-huh.
because I myself know a great deal about American history also. So I see that being... I have a sense of perspective in that this is not China, this is not America per se, but this is a land that belonged to Indians, conquered by Europeans. Subsequently, every 10, 15 years, some new nationality would begin to migrate over here, whether it's Teutonic or Anglo-Saxon or Mediterranean or Slavic. I understand they come here, and Chinese came here on, you know, in the cyclical immigration. So I felt that I don't see the other people, he's a low fun, he's a white man, or like he owns this country, I'm a Chinese, I'm an immigrant, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I see it as a historic process, so I see myself as part of a Chinese American with a different culture from that of China.
Mm-hmm.
Early in life I see that because I see around me those Chinese who come from China are different in habits, different in talk,
mm-hmm.
they're different in approach, and I see American, you know, I see us bridging it, I see myself thinking part Chinese, thinking part, mm-hmm. part American, you know, part English in language. And then I see even changes. And I see right now there's about 6 classes of Chinese right now in Chinatown alone, 6 groups of Chinese.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But at that time, if anyone asks you, which way did you feel? Do you add other? In other words, if you had to make a choice, did you feel more Chinese or feel more non-Chinese? Let's put it that way.
I feel more Chinese because of the visibility of differences, you know, in facial structure and color, you know. In that sense, I know it's almost very difficult to say it because American would call me Chinese, so I assume that I'm Chinese American, you know, Chinese.
Did you ever feel sorry for being Chinese?
I felt angry about being Chinese sometimes because when I was very young, there are a lot of things forbidden to us, understand?
Mm.
I think that there was, in some of the towns I live in, there was some curfew, if I can remember. There's a whistle blown at 8 or 9 o'clock when we were supposed to go back to where we were, you know, that kind of thing, you know? I can't remember whether Oakland was like that or not.
Only the Chinese had to observe the curfew?
I think there was one town that the Chinese observed the curfew for a short time and then it was withdrawn. I don't forget whether it's Oakland or thereabouts, Berkeley. Or, but I don't know whether it applied to Chinese alone or not. But I think
did
that
you ever
because the or else whether the policeman on the beat interpreted for us.
I
now,
see.
Take for instance,
okay.
There's a 9 o'clock whistle from the city hall, mm-hmm. and the policeman on the beat was saying, "Hey, you better get home there, Charlie." You know, mm. So it's the legality of it is not that apparent to us because we're concerned with only immediate enforcements when you actually feel it personally.
Did you ever have an encounter of specific discrimination against Chinese, either you as a witness or you as a participant?
You ask me whether I had witnessed 1,000 acts of discrimination? I have. And not one, I had 1,000. No, well, let me put it this way, very simply. From the time I was born to 1940, discrimination is the normal life of the Chinese. When the big World War came, when China became an ally of the United States after Pearl Harbor,
mm-hmm.
the discrimination began to cease because of necessity. We wanted to be serving the army, we are in aircraft, and also because the Chinese see on an international scale as being allies, and because the American soldiers begin to take out Chinese girls and Japanese girls. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Those sociological factors minimize the discrimination, but you ask me for the subtle form of discrimination. Have I ever seen a Chinese mayor? I said, I have not. Now, those are discrimination, whether you see them or not. I see a lot of Chinese Uncle Toms in my life.
I see. Did you ever, for instance, try to buy a house or rent an apartment?
Yes. In the 40s, yes. In the 30s. Latter part of the 30s, when I was more independent, when I was making a little bit more better living, I began to, you know, instead of living with somebody else or renting a room, you know, understand? I began to say, I want a little apartment. I find there is discrimination in certain parts of town, you see? But I also, when I was younger, there were hotels that would not accept us, there were barbershops that would not cut our hair.
Personal experience.
Uh-huh. And only about 5 or 6 years ago, I was in Aspen, Colorado, where I have a real big school right now, you know, Aspen Academy. I'm the principal of the school. I was trying to make it a hair.
Who was the principal of the school?
I was.
You in
Aspen, Colorado.
Oh.
Well, that's later on.
Uh-huh.
I try to get a haircut, and they won't cut my hair. The guy said, I'm busy. He didn't explain anything else.
Uh-huh.
And he's come back some other time. I said, when? In the far future. You
oh.
understand? So far, the other thing is that.
But in Los Angeles, though.
Yeah, in Los Angeles, but discrimination is a little less direct, overt. You have a whole group of people buying things. Then those that did not have numbers yet. They wait on you to last.
Mm.
You understand?
I see.
All right. You buy a pair of shoes, they try to palm off some old stock and you assume that you don't know anything more, understand? And this type of stuff, subtle discrimination goes on all the time, you know, understand? You know?
Yeah.
Or you go have a public appearance with a Caucasian lady,
mm-hmm.
and everybody stares at you.
At you or her, or both of you?
Both of you, as a kid, you know. It's kind of but these days it's very commonplace. As a matter of fact,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people think it's very chic, you know, to be in it, you know. But I come from a different era. I come from an era where everything is questioned at you, you know, where you don't cash your check. Things, you know.
Yeah.
Also another thing, where the neighbors, when you get into an apartment, neighbor, you know, where they, you listen to a lot of talk where unconsciously they discriminate against you, and all of a sudden they find out they discriminate against you, even from habit, like they say, oh, he hadn't got a Chinaman's chance.
Mm.
Well, okay, you know, you're a Chinaman, they talk to you like that, all of a sudden they catch themselves, you know. Sometimes they use the white chime, they use the white chink, you know. Oh, I like you chinks. Oh, then they hold back, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
But don't forget, it's a different generation. Many of the new generation that grows up here have become adults now, fought together with Chinese against the Japanese. You know what I mean? They have Chinese in the ranks. They work together with Chinese in the factory. They went to school with China. There's a different feeling now, well, even for those people who have grown up. But you have to remember, I'm 70 years old now,
mm-hmm.
and I live in 3-4 generations back.
Yeah. Did you take any legal or social recourse?
No, there's no need to take legal because there are
For instance, if you find that the person would not rent the apartment to you.
But in those days, you do not have any legal recourse. People can rent whoever they want to. Only fair housing and discriminatory laws came after the Second World War.
And
you go to a small town like Northern California in the countryside, you know, the mountainside, you know, with off the center, people outrightly tell you where you are, and you better obey, just like the blacks in the South in the old
mm-hmm.
days. Those great big rough Americans can say to you, look at, hey, you're new around here, huh? You're visiting, huh? What are you, a Chinaman or a Jap? You know, talking to you clear cut like that, you know, and you sort of try to be on a good side, and you know, you're just visiting, you know, that kind of thing, you know. You don't want to cross them up, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, if they get a little drunk on the road there, you know, on a Saturday night and you're shopping, they can kick you right off the sidewalk.
Mm.
But those are, let us say, era 1920, 1930, and maybe early, no, late, but with the coming of the international association changing, the old people are dying out. Those who see Chinese as an inferior group in early California, because Chinese in early California has less rights than even blacks. Blacks can buy land. Chinese cannot buy land.
Where was that?
California.
No, where?
Well, in the old days, remember the Oriental land laws? Chinese cannot buy land, alien land law.
That was a law in the late 1800s.
Yeah, but if the sociological thing persists,
mm-hmm.
that they have seen you in a very low light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can't buy land, you must be lower than the blacks who can buy land.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And they hang Chinese, 10 of them, in the city hall down here in Los Angeles. You know about that, don't you? You should study on the early days in California before you even...
Why did they... when was that?
In the 1870s, 1880s, those are anti-Chinese riots. You know the reason for the anti-Chinese riots?
Oh, which one?
There's a whole sustaining movement from 1870 to 1880s, and last a little bit to the early 1890s, but by that 1890s, it settled down. But there's very strong 1870, 1880s, where the reason for that is that they welcomed the Chinese to come here in the early days of the gold, because the white man goes to the hills to get gold. He had no time to do raising food and cleaning the streets, cleaning the laundry, making the food, the menial work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese are welcome. They say, you know, Charlie, he's a good boy. He's a hard worker. But when the gold begin to pan out on the hills and the white man come back to the city, there's no work. Naturally, the Chinese did not take his work away, but it's a good excuse for some of the agitators, you know, to make political thing. Oh, the Chinese have taken all our jobs away. The white man never want the jobs the Chinese do anyway.
Yeah, that was supposedly the reason for most of the riots.
Yeah, it's a scapegoat, right? So what happened is that also because the Chinese were not easily assimilated, because first of all, they did not inquire the Chinese to. The Chinese were not families, they were all males. So they were not a similar, they were not family situation. They had no children going to school. They were not a new generation. So the alien part of the Chinese is that the alien is an inferior group of people that are here in transit, that we can dispose of them. All right. But the reason I talk about all this is there is a historic momentum that carries on 20 years afterwards, you know. I grew up in that last part of that momentum.
Mm-hmm. All right. Did you ever join any associations in Chinatown?
Well, as a whole, we are kind of, as a local, we were a rather small clan, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Although in China, we're a big clan, you know.
Mm. So, were there?
We joined a family association.
Family associations?
Yeah, there were small. And there was about 700 people in San Francisco.
Not in LA though.
In LA there was a small group also, there was 80 or 90 people. But, you know, once in a while we get together, but there's no reason because we have less in common than anything else except the same name, you see?
Mm-hmm.
But in San Francisco, I remember my elders once in a while would say, go there and New Year dinner, you know, the people would like to know who you are and that kind of thing, you know? Right.
But in LA you did not join any family associations.
No, they were not strong. Only in LA the Wongs and the four families and the Lees are very strong because they come.
Mm-hmm.
See, the situation in America so far Chinese are concerned are not because they are.